Good evening, I'm Christian Esguerra, and welcome to this episode of After the Fact, where we get to see things more clearly, where we get a better sense of the truth. Let's begin by dissecting the news. The most direct impact of our choices, whether good or bad, during elections is felt at the local level, in the very communities where we live in. You pick a competent mayor, for instance, and expect meaningful programs and services for the next 3 years. But choose a bad one and you'll suffer for years to come. We've seen this with how local governments have been handling the COVID-19 pandemic. Some commendable, others forgettable. Tonight, welcome to our special series on candidates running for local positions in the 2022 elections. We'll look at the issues and all politics as local. Most of the positions at stake in the May elections will be contested at the local level. Mayors, governors, congressmen, for instance. So it's important to understand the functions of these officials and whether candidates courting our votes indeed have what it takes to perform them. Be part of our discussion. Send us your questions and comments on our YouTube live chat or tweet us using the hashtag ANCAfterTheFact. Joining us tonight is Attorney Tony Lavinia. He's the former dean of the Ateneo School of Government. Also with us is Attorney Michael Henry Yusinko. He's a senior research fellow at the Ateneo Policy Center. Good evening, gentlemen, and thank you for joining us on the program tonight.
Good evening, Christian. Thank you for having me. And also, good evening and Happy New Year to Dean Tony.
Good evening, Christian. Good evening, Michael.
Okay, basically this special segment is intended to help better inform our voters in terms of choosing their local leaders. I'd like to start this conversation by making a distinction between how local elections are run compared to the campaign for the national posts. I'd like to start with Dean Tony.
It's very different because local elections are very personal. Very close in. They really have to be done in a retail way. You can't just rely on radio, TV, on social media. All of that is important, but the most important part is you're able to go night after night to neighborhoods, to communities, obviously in the pandemic, it's difficult to necessarily shake the hands of everyone or embrace everyone, but that presence still has to happen. I mean, so it's very personal, to be honest. While you can run a national campaign for the presidency, with a few forays, very direct here and there retail, but most of the time it's about advertisements, social media, making statements, the press, and that kind of engagement. Because it's impossible for you to even go around 5% of the country and meet everyone. But as mayor, even of a city like Manila, you have to go to the barangays, and that's why it's 24/7 campaigning for a city like Manila. For a city like my own, like Cagayan de Oro, usually they do it at night. You don't have to do this 24/7 because there's enough time to go to all the barangays.
Because of the population, is smaller than that in Manila. Yes.
Less barangays and smaller ones.
Okay. Attorney Yusinko, I think that's also a common observation. When you talk about how local campaigns are run, it's very personalistic. But in this case, does it necessarily follow that since the campaign at the local level is very personal, that necessarily voters bother to look into the qualifications, that they really try to know their candidates better?
Well, I don't think we can express a definitive answer, no, whether yes or no to your question, Christian. I think there are some segments of our electorate that may do that, no? In fact, I know some people who are who do that regularly, really examine and evaluate their local candidates. because they understand the importance of that election. But I think it's safe to say that most of our voters, because of, again, also what about of what Dean Tony said, that local elections being really personality driven because of the kinship and other relationships, close relationships in attendance when it comes to local elections. Sometimes our voters will have a more forgiving, I would say, a more forgiving approach to local candidates. And that's really the sad reality, Christian, no? Because we want elections to be really a means to implement changes, right? Reforms. But because of the domination of fat dynasties, even at the local level, no? Our local elections have ceased to become that opportunity for the electorate. It's been elections for the past maybe two decades really have become an exercise for political dynasties to just maintain themselves in power. So that's really the sad reality now of our local elections.
Dean Tony, why do you think that is the case? Of course, we've also heard this comment coming from people on the ground saying that they don't really bother that much with dynasties because of the argument that there are good dynasties and there are bad dynasties. And there's also this tendency to go for the names or the brands that they have been accustomed to, right?
Yeah. And you know, that's true. That in fact, and also it's true, and here I differ a little bit from Michael because I've followed quite a lot of campaigns and a lot of reformist politicians, and they can win against dynasties. It's not impossible to defeat dynasties at the local level. You know what I mean? There's enough examples of that. In Metro Manila, you know, Vico Soto, Isko Moreno, Francis Zamora. I mean, you saw quite a number of, of course, we have Kakabag-aw in Dinagat Islands. I mean, there's even now in this campaign, there are strong campaigns that are being launched against dynastic families. I mean, it's stronger, I think, at the local level than sometimes especially at senatorial level, which is more difficult to break through. But they do arrive in campaigns or start in the campaigns with an advantage. No, I mean, see the it's not qualifications. You actually asked the question at the beginning. It's not qualifications that matter in local elections. It's actually empathy, record as a official, and sometimes record of the family, record as a person, as a businessman, as a lawyer, if you were a lawyer before you become a politician, if you're a new politician, that's what matters most in the local elections, from what I have seen. But I know that you can defeat dynasties. We actually encourage new politicians to come up and not to be intimidated by dynasties. You don't even have to have that much money. And Vico did not have a lot of money. He did have a name, that's important. But that, and Isko Moreno, they defeated dynasties by just good campaigning, good engagement. That the kind of engagement I told you at the beginning, 24/7, for Metro Manila, it's 24/7. For smaller cities, every night during the campaign, you have to go to two or three barangays and show yourself. And you can win against dynasties just by doing that.
Okay. Attorney Yusinko, I think we saw that in the last elections, and that's true. Not all dynasties are unbeatable. Some of them could be defeated. But there's also this other perspective that it's more of an exception than the rule. It's still very difficult to dismantle dynasties because of the political and structures that they have, they were able to establish in their own political basis, right? So in this case, I go back to that original question. Is that really a campaign issue as far as the local level is concerned, if one candidate comes from a dynasty and the other doesn't, especially in the not-so-urbanized areas?
Well, by default, it's not going to be an issue because most of the races in those areas that you mentioned will be between dynasties, right? So the proposition for most voters in those areas is just pick your own dynasty, right? So in that perverse sense, it's not going to be an issue because there are no other non-dynasty candidates running against them. And there's a lot of localities in that kind of situation. Now, luckily, we've seen in the 2019 elections, what Dean Tony said or referred to as dynasty slayers, right? So that proves that it can happen. But for that to happen, there has to be a non-dynasty candidate who has a viable way or viable path to win to make it an issue. Because if it's between dynasties, then really, by some perverse sense, it's not an issue anymore. Voters are left to choose the lesser evil, for a lack of a better term.
Okay. Dean Tony, that was quite, you binagit yung kaya before I asked the question kay Attorney Yusinko. That basically, qualifications don't matter to many voters at the local level, but it's more about empathy, of course, record of the candidate and the family, tsaka siguro ability to help them, di ba? Yung they feel a certain affinity to a certain candidate. But strictly speaking, let's talk about the qualifications. For instance, what should voters look into in terms of candidates for mayor, for instance? Parang just to put the conversation more legitimately, no? Ano ba yung qualifications dapat na hanapin ng mga botante sa isang tumatakbo sa pagka-mayor, for instance? A local executive position.
Sure. Ako, tatlo dapat ang hinahanap, no? Three things that they should look for. One is vision. You know, where does this candidate want to bring the city or province or barangay to? Saan niya gusto dalhin? Where will he be bring all of us? This is very important, Christian, especially next year, because of the Mandanas ruling. In essence, to be honest, I would even say the national government is almost useless starting next year. You know, important for foreign affairs, important for general economic things, but I would say even for defense, they're not going to have a lot of money to do the things they should do. For police, they do not have a lot of money. So the shift, the power shift is enormous to local governments. Local governments would have a lot more money than the national government for things like health, for economic development, for social protection. So we need to ask our local government candidates, paano mo gamitin yung pera na yan? Di ba? Ang dami-dami mong pera. You'll have a lot of money next year. You know what I mean? The increases are enormous, tens of the millions, hundreds of millions in some cases. And I welcome that. I really welcome that because in our archipelago, we should have decentralized leadership and decentralized governance because of the apology, the Mandanas ruling. The second quality I will look for is the nature of leadership that the candidate wants. Servant leadership, authoritarian leadership, one-man leadership, inclusiveness, stakeholder, making sure that stakeholders participate in the decision-making. Is it a team or is it just one person? I think that's very important for us to do. And then finally, the third part is some basic skills, honestly. Basic skills of management, right? Especially for the bigger the LGUs, the more management skills that person must have. And here, it's a combination of skills because you can't have all the skills necessary. So a lawyer would be good, but a businessman would also be good. A medical doctor would also be good, and would need a combination of different skills to govern better.
Okay, Attorney Yusinko, would you like to add to that when it comes to the skills needed for a local executive, in particular the mayor, and how do voters move past the perceptions or images created by a good campaign team for a particular candidate, for instance? Because I remember, I think several election cycles ago, I saw this poster in one LGU in Metro Manila. Ang campaign niya nakalagay, ano ba yun, bata na pogi pa or pogi na matalino pa. I mean, can you honestly believe someone campaigning based on his good looks? And by the way, for the record, he was not even handsome. So you can, how do you move past that?
Yep.
Well, alam mo, Christian, I always say, and I'm just talking about the, I just want to talk about this particular elections. No. Let's look at our electorate. Our electorate majority will be coming from the age range of 18 to 30 years old, 30 to 35. And most of them, if not all of them, are digital natives. So this is where they live now, no? Cyberspace, particularly social media. So to answer your question directly, how can they really pierce that kind of campaigning of focusing on personal qualities like how you look or where you studied, et cetera, et cetera, is use social media as a tool to directly interact with the candidate. And I want to emphasize interact, no? Okay? I'm not saying that they should debate or fight with the candidate. No, what I mean is just interact. Have a respectful discussion with the candidate. Ask them tough questions. And Dean Tony is exactly right. No? Because of the Mandanas decision, our local officials will be responsible for a huge amount of the public coffers. But if I may add, not just be responsible for public money, but also for public delivery of services, di ba? Because of Executive Order 138, which, a second crack at decentralization, our local government units now are the primary responsible agency to deliver the public services like health, agriculture, and so forth. So it's not just about having more money, but it's also about having more responsibility. So when we evaluate and assess local candidates, we have to bear that in mind that itong mga to will really, our lives, our daily lives will be in their hands. So the questions we should be asking will be about food security, conservation of the environment because of climate change, disaster risk mitigation, solid waste management. These are all the issues that we should be asking them because, as Dean Tony said, they will be the primary responsible agency for these kinds of public deliverables.
That would actually require good management skills, right?
Yes.
Good management skills, good budgeting skills, good... But Christian, if I may add, those kinds of skills can be learned, no? I'm not plugging our school, but these are the type of skills that our local officials can learn in the local government academy. You know, in fact, DILG is now very busy implementing training sessions with for local officials to learn those skills. But what is vital here is the community, not just the candidate, but the community being responsible for the implementation of the Mandanas and also of EO 138. So I guess what I'm trying to say is the voters should not really rely on the candidates alone, right? Because they too have a responsibility in making sure that this election really delivered the results that we want.
Dean Tony, the way certain local officials have been handling the COVID-19 pandemic for more than 2 years now, how important is this as a gauge for voters as to whether certain officials should be re-elected or perhaps it's time to look for better choices? I mean, this could serve as a dress rehearsal of sorts for some candidates running in 2022, right? So how important is this handling or mishandling of the pandemic?
Probably the most important thing. It's probably the most important, you know, for the incumbent officials that are running again or running for a different position, local or national. It's probably the most important thing to look at. How did they perform during the pandemic? Because there's nothing more life and death, right? And more about the future than how you handle the pandemic. And to be quite honest, though, many of them did well. In fact, I would say most of the local governments I know have done well. It's the national government that has failed us, to be honest. Or another way of putting it, without the local government, we would have been a much better, much worse place than we currently are. And I mean, but just anecdotally, because I don't think studies have been made about that. Local governments, at least the ones I know in Metro Manila, in Mindanao, I know a few in Visayas, you know, also the local governments have been very creative. It's actually the best argument for the Mandanas ruling. The best argument for the Mandanas ruling is that local governments did better in the pandemic than the national government agencies.
Okay, so this is something that the voters really have to be familiar with. Kasi baka din sa mga nanonood sa atin, what is that Mandanas ruling all about? So basically, mas malaki ang share ng local government units.
Basically,
national revenues. Mas maraming pera dapat mapunta sa inyo.
Nag-increase yung ano, the share of local governments increased considerably because the Supreme Court said, and I agree with the Supreme Court, that the national government was wrong in just computing the local government share as income tax and did not include all the other taxes. When the Constitution and the local government code is very clear that it's all taxes that should be shared, and rightly so.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so okay. Speaking of the Mandanas ruling, Attorney Yosinco, there are those who are still concerned that even if this is the latest Supreme Court decision, it's not yet as institutionalized as it should be, diba? So baka daw magkaroon ng subsequent ruling and this could be overturned. What would be the best way to make sure that this would remain, that it's here to stay?
Well, first of all, I seriously doubt that it's going to be overturned, though. Because as Dean Tony said, the Constitution is clear that this is really how the national tax allocation should be computed. So that's one. But really, for it to be, quote-unquote, to be institutionalized is for the local government units to show that they are capable of spending the money the right way. Meaning, but before that, Christian, let me just add again, the Mandanas discussion should never forget the EO 138 discussion, no? Because the Mandanas decision raised the amount that LGUs will get, but EO 138 also raised the list of responsibilities that they have in terms of public deliverables. So the money that they got, in the increase of it, will now be spent on the increase in their responsibilities, right? So, for the quote-unquote decentralization, the enhanced decentralization to be institutionalized, in your words, the LGUs, particularly the local officials, will have to use the money as it was intended to be, which is to be spent for the deliverables, the public service deliverables listed in the local government code and through the process outlined in Executive Order 138. So that is really what our voters must look out for. to be mindful of that yung decentralization that Executive Order 138 has outlined has to be implemented properly. And local officials play a big role. Whether we like it or not, local officials, the persons that they will elect in municipio, in the city hall, in the provincial hall, they all play a very significant role in making sure that decentralization works for the people, not just for the dynasties.
Okay. Then, Tony, let's go to a burning issue in 2020, and I think it's still a very important issue for a lot of Filipinos. When ABS-CBN was shut down in 2020, and subsequently 70 congressmen, then led by former Speaker Alan Peter Cayetano, voted to kill, I'm using the words that they used, the word that they used, to kill the franchise application of ABS-CBN. A lot of people were outraged, and on social media, back then, they promised to seek accountability or exact quote-unquote revenge on the 70 congressmen in 2022. We're still hearing that now. They're saying na papanagutin namin kayo sa 2022 elections, we would make sure that you would not win again. That's assuming that all of them would seek re-election or would run for another position. My question is, given the influence of political dynasties, political clans in these areas, how optimistic are you that that would really happen when it comes to exacting revenge, quote-unquote, on the 70 congressmen? Kasi may iba dyan, wala namang kalaban, for instance, diba? So, paano babangga yun? Yung accountability at saka yung political dynasty?
Well, ano yan eh? That's a function of the campaign. There must be candidates that will promise that. In other words, the opposite will promise the opposite of those that voted against ABS-CBN, or for that matter, any issue that's important. That's a function of the campaign. I mean, the truth is, people might start with feeling something like that, but if it doesn't come out in the campaign because there's no candidates or no political parties. And that's a challenge for us, diba? Kasi kung may political parties ka sana, chak na lalabas yan. But we don't have political parties in this country. So, you know, then it becomes it's easy to get the get out of jail card for all of these politicians, and then there's no accountability for them because of that. Okay. So that's why it's so important to have opposing candidates, to have an opposition, because without an opposition, these issues will not come up at all.
Okay. Attorney Yusinko, what do you think?
Well, that would have been a great opening for a dynasty slayer, no? Because if articulated well in a campaign, the ABS-CBN shutdown or closure or death or whatever you want to call it is actually a good issue against those members of political dynasties who voted for it. No, it's a good argument, and the reason why I'm saying it's a good argument because many Filipinos now really felt the absence of ABS-CBN because of those natural calamities that have happened. And the absence of ABS-CBN in those areas really contributed to the hardship of communication, of government being able to address the issues on the ground. So it was a good opening. It continues to be a good opening, but as to whether there are dynasty slayers out there who will be able, you know, to use that against the infamous 70, as you said, that's really a different matter altogether. And that remains to be seen.
But in the local level, do voters really vote or choose their candidates based on issues? Because I don't think that's even that much of an issue also in the national, di ba? Yung para bang single issue voter. Pero bang ganun sa...
Like I said, Krishna, no? Itong particular issue na to had unfortunately, had the natural calamities did not hit us, maybe this issue would not have been relevant for voters in those areas. But I mean, the absence of ABS-CBN in these times really was a huge impact in terms of those victims of those calamities bearing the hardships. No, so it will be relevant to them precisely because it hit them hard.
Din Tony, how much influence do national campaigns usually exert or have on local campaigns? For instance, if you're a voter and you like this particular candidate for mayor, for instance, but you do not like the presidential candidate that he or she is endorsing, does that really matter, or should that matter to the voter?
That's a tricky question, but the answer is it depends. Sometimes the national elections, let me put it this way, the general rules doesn't actually matter. You know, people will choose their local elections regardless of who their national choices are and who are the people running in the national elections. And people will also choose their presidential choices, certainly, regardless of who is being endorsed by the local politicians. For the Senate, it's a bit more tricky because there's 12 of them. So the local politicians can have some say about, you know, talking to their voters and say, please include this, please include that, because they don't necessarily have to say include all 12 that I want. You can also choose your own, right? But generally, there's that disconnect. But sometimes, depending on the issues and depending on the candidates, the national slate will matter for the local slate, right? So, for example, if the person running for president is a mayor or a governor or a local politician from a particular place, then that particular place, the local officials there, the local candidates that are endorsed by that person might actually make a difference. No? If it's a very popular candidate in a place and endorses a not too popular local government person or candidate, that might make a difference. I mean, we're seeing that, I think, in some, because right now, as we've discussed before, Marcos is polling better, and we're seeing that in some places, you know, the opponents that should actually not have a chance are, you know, are galvanized by being endorsed by a strong presidential candidate. In a tightly controlled local government, the endorsement of a mayor can make a difference for the national candidate. So it's hard to figure out what the rule is because it's so dependent on the circumstances.
Right, factors involved. No? Would you like to add to that, Attorney Yusinko? Because again, I don't know whether how widespread this sentiment or concern is. But there are places, of course, na siguro the predominant choice, although unofficially, would be a particular candidate. But all of a sudden, makikita nila yung mayor nila seeking re-election is supporting a presidential candidate that they are very much opposed to. I mean, is that even a factor? Or there's certain autonomy when it comes to those choices that they don't really care which particular presidential candidate my choice for mayor wants?
So, Christian, I think what's clear is that voters will listen to the dynasty that they favor, but only as to whom to vote at the local level. They won't necessarily really obey, even if it's a command from their favored dynasty, whom to vote at the national level. Now, by some chance coincide, no? They have the same preference, then that's great. But I think what's very clear now at this point is that voters will only listen to their favored dynasty with regards to voting at the local level. With regards to voting at the national level, I mean, whom to vote for president and even vice president, even senator, I think majority of our voters will vote using their own preference, no? Not the preference of whoever dynasty they favor.
Okay. Then, Tony, let's go to the age-old problem in Philippine politics that concerns political dynasties, in particular the fat dynasties, yung binanggit ni Attorney Mike kanina. Because there was a study by the Ateneo School of Government a few years back, no, making a distinction between thin and fat dynasties, yung matataba, tsaka yung mga maninipis na dynasties. Okay? You sound very optimistic, Dean Tony, earlier when you mentioned the dynasty slayers in 2019. But somehow are you seeing more improvement in terms of picking non-dynastic candidates in 2022, or that baka naman parang more of an aberration yung nakita natin in 2019 and most places might go back to the way they used to vote, which was for dynasties in 2022?
Well, I think statistically it's getting worse. Now it's gotten worse. So I'm not gonna sugarcoat that. So the real question is, how do we change that? How do we change that pattern that gets worse, right? I mean, even now you see the presidential candidates are the leading presidential candidates certainly are in fact a dynasty, are represented by two dynasties, and it's an alliance of dynasties as has been set out. So yes, right now the dynasties are in fact winning, and are in fact, you know, and what I was just saying by pointing to those examples was that it's not impossible to defeat them, but right now they are the upper hand. I'll be honest with you, Christian, the only way you can stop that is a constitutional change that happens through someone like something like EDSA or a constitutional convention where you ban it, and it has to be a constitutional convention not dominated by dynasties. That's why you can't trust Congress to change the constitution. It has to be non-partisan, non-political delegates that, you know, the original conception of the 1971 Constitutional Convention. That is really the only way that you can do that. Of course, if you can't do it that way, then the other way is political parties, getting political parties to be stronger. How do you get there? Well, this is linked to the peace process with the Communist Party, which I hope at some point, if it happens, when we finally get to that, it ends with a political settlement where we will what we call proportional voting according to political parties and not according to individuals. That requires constitutional change as well. But that's really the hope for this. Otherwise, it will just get worse. You know, at some point, of course, when it gets really, really bad, the dynasty in power can be kicked out, but they could be replaced by another dynasty or replaced by a reformer that doesn't carry with them a dynasty. And that happens, but that would be an aberration in my view. You know, dynasties also learn that they have to deliver in order to stay in power.
Okay. Attorney Mike.
Well, I think I've answered this before. No? Obviously, dynasties is really, really the worst problem that we have. It's what makes our political system so rotten. But there, to solve it, to address it, requires a basket of solutions. No? So there's not one silver bullet because it's gotten so worse, right? So it now requires a basket of solutions. So the first one, of course, is we will still work hard for the enactment of the implementing law. It's an impossible dream, but it's still something that we must strive for. The second thing is media has a responsibility to put a light, no, a highlight on dynasty slayers. And kudos to you, Christian, because you've devoted much airtime on dynasty slayers like Mags Maglana, di ba? So these are the kinds of efforts we should expect from media, because this is a significant way to chop down the domination of dynasties. Of course, the third one is for really the voters themselves to rally behind dynasty slayers. So not just vote for them, but really to support them. Ang lesson dito is really that mayor from Palawan, no, from Kawayan, Palawan. He said that the only way that he won against the dynasty is because the community supported him, not just during the campaign, but also while he was still mayor, although hindi maganda yung nangyari sa kanya because of the dynasty that he defeated. So those are the basket of solutions that we can to address the problem of dynasties.
Okay, Attorney Michael Henry Cinco and Dean Tony Lavinia, thank you very much, gentlemen, for joining us tonight on the program.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
We're going to take a quick break after the fact. We'll be right back.